Hello and welcome to the Joffrey on Family Fellows podcast, a public humanities project for Miami University's Humanities Center. My name is Henry Roach, and I am one of six undergraduate Joffrey on Family Fellows for the 2019-2020 school year. As part of the Altman Lecture Series on Time and Temporality, we are interviewing various experts in an attempt to illuminate interdisciplinary perspectives on the nature of time, how we think about it, and our place in it. As part of the lecture series, Dr. Janann Ismail, professor of philosophy at Columbia University, was brought in to discuss her work, which centers on the philosophy of physics. In her work, Dr. Ismail problematizes such concepts as space-time, causality, probability, and natural laws, also exploring quantum mechanics. Recently, Dr. Ismail was kind enough to sit down with us and discuss and clarify her ideas at length. Dr. Ismail often focuses on the structure and nature of space and time, exploring the different ways in which such things can be thought of as existing in the real world, and as they can be thought of as existing only as constructs. We started our interview by asking her when she thinks about time in her own life.
Times when I do things that I haven't done in a while. So when I go home or you know, visit my parents, or I see people I haven't seen in a while. So sort of touching moments of the past, in a way.
We then discussed with Dr. Ismail an article she co-authored with Dr. Hugh Price, a professor of philosophy at Cambridge University, in which they write that the difference between the phenomenological aspect of time and the time described by physics oppose each other on the idea of time flowing, and that the difference is only a matter of perspective. Namely, one is within time, and the other is from outside time. We asked her to expand on what this distinction is in regard to a potential perspective outside time, and her own views on the matter.
His view is that all of those things are, they're not, we shouldn't sort of reify them in the objective fabric of the world. We shouldn't think of them as existing there independently of us, but rather as aspects of the way that a particular subjective perspective, you know, in time and space relates to its own environment and the world. I think something very like that. I think he tends to be a little bit more, think of them as a little bit more mind-dependent than I do. I tend to think that all of those relational aspects, you know, us and our relationship to our environment, those are themselves, in a sense, objective because we're parts of the world. But I don't think of them as they're pre-existing independently of us.
In her lecture, Dr. Ismail made reference to a letter written by Albert Einstein in which he calls time a stubbornly persistent illusion. We asked her to clarify her thoughts about the matter and whether she agreed with that assertion, additionally inquiring whether she thought that we maintained our selfhood over time.
So that phrase, the stubbornly persistent illusion, that comes from Einstein, this letter that I quoted in my talk, where he was sort of consoling the widow of a friend. He did use the phrase, and he used this phrase of illusion in lots of places, but I actually, it's questionable how much he really meant that as a philosophical position. I certainly don't think that the sort of the passage and the flow of time is an illusion. I just think it's an aspect of our experience. It depends crucially on us being embedded in time, experiencing time one moment, and then another, and then another, and representing those moments, you know, as we experience them in the context of our memories of our past and so on.
On the topic of selfhood, we asked Dr. Ismail to expand her thoughts on the continuity or discontinuity of personal identity over time.
One way in which we think of ourselves pre-theoretically, so in common sense before we sort of, you know, do science, and is that we tend to think of ourselves as kind of loci of mental life that move through time. That's actually not a coherent picture, and nothing moves through time for the same reasons I said time itself doesn't pass. There's just moments laid out in time. Your life is a kind of series of moments embedded in, you know, the larger narrative of history. What changes is only your temporal perspective over time. So the right way to think of it, the coherent way to think of it, and the way that that fits nicely into the sort of physics picture where time is just one dimension of a four-dimensional manifold of events, is that your life is just a series of points, temporal points. At each one of those points, you're remembering your past and looking into your future, so you're representing all of time in a way, or at least, you know, at the small scale of your life. And you really are different from one moment to the next. Because from one moment to the next, you have a certain amount of past behind you, a certain amount of future in front of you. Your memories are different. What you're experiencing at that moment is different. The whole you is the whole collection of those things. But every moment in that life, it's not as though there's some persisting thing that's there through all of it and experiencing all of it. What you are is something like, you know, a kind of, it's hard to put, formally what you are is the subject of a point of view, and the point of view is changing over time, but there's no thing that moves through time that's there at every moment of it.
Bringing up one of the previous speakers, Dr. Marcia Bjornerud, who used geological time as an example of how human time is limited in scope, we asked Dr. Ismail what a physics-based perspective on time would be.
So there's a couple of things to say. One is, that sort of relationship between human time and larger time scales is all in itself within time. So it's like relating, you know, if you're thinking of a sports, like a football season, you know, it's like relating a particular game to the arc of the season as a whole, to the history of the team and its interactions with other teams. The physics time tries to do something a little bit more broad in terms of, again, stepping outside of time, looking at all of those narratives and their interrelationships to one another. So the physics perspective is meaning to be kind of all-encompassing and to subsume all of those narratives and look at the relation and portray or depict the relationships between them.
We then asked Dr. Ismail to elaborate upon her idea of a perspective outside time.
There's this idea that you take yourself outside of time and you look at time, and what's portrayed when you look at time from the outside in that sense is just a set of relationships between points in time. When you put yourself in time, in the way that we actually experience time, because our lives are embedded in time, we're always looking from some particular temporal standpoint to the future and to the past. So what it means to call some other moment, you know, past or future, is that it precedes or succeeds the present moment. So again, there's that interplay between, you know, representing temporal moments in terms of their relationship to the here and now, and representing simply the structure of moments as they are, you know, in relationship to one another.
Referencing the work of Dr. Carlo Rovelli, a prominent theoretical physicist, we asked her to detail what insights looking within and without time can yield with regard to commonly accepted spatiotemporal principles.
We start, so there's two things. One is, you know, we're looking at the more fine scale structures, and as we get deeper and deeper, and maybe if Carlo is right, down to the level of the kind of below the Planck scale, what we find is that the spatiotemporal structures dissolve into something non-spatiotemporal. But there's also this process of abstraction, which that's a slightly different thing, where we take ourselves out of the world and look at time itself, you know, just in terms of the structure of relationships. So on the one hand, there's going from within time, going deeper and finding at, you know, at the below the Planck scale, time, the temporal and spatiotemporal structures might themselves dissolve. But there's also this process of abstraction where, you know, we're not looking from the inside, but trying to look from the outside at the relationships that constitute time.
Building upon her description of the sort of reality space-time can be said to have, we asked whether she believed that space-time was a thing unto itself, or only a thing insofar as it is constructed by different things themselves existing, whose relationship constructs space-time.
Okay, good question. So I'll give it a name. That's a big debate between what are called substantivalists and relationalists. So the two main views are, is space or space-time itself a thing in the sense of a substance, a thing in its own right, an object? Or is space rather just the collection of relationships between things, you know, so material bodies of different kinds? Or events. So in relativity, events are taken as basic. My prejudices, partly because I think this is the direction that physics seems to support, is relationalism. I don't think space-time should be thought of as a substance, but rather as a collection of relationships between events.
Going off of that, we asked whether space-time really exists, if at a level below the Planck scale it dissolves.
All of it exists. So the most basic stuff isn't spatiotemporal, but it gives rise to spatiotemporal stuff. Everything that exists, including you and me and tables and chairs and cats and dogs, they all exist. They're just not fundamental. So the way to think about it is we all start. You know, we kind of interface with reality. At the level of things like tables and chairs and cats and dogs and human bodies and things that we bump up against and relationships of pulling and pushing and so on. But all of those things have a substructure, which means the more fine-scale structure that we don't have immediate contact with. And what we do when we do science is we look at the more and more fine-scale structures of those things.
One of the goals of the Altman program is that in bringing together interdisciplinary perspectives, new answers to existing questions might be yielded, and new exciting fields of inquiry might be opened up. With this in mind, Dr. Ismail shared her thoughts on the value of interdisciplinary work.
That's right, yeah. So the specific work I do in philosophy of physics, it's really trying to understand what physics tells us about the world, and in particular what physics tells us about time, for example, the stuff I was talking about here, and how it relates to how we experience the world and how we experience time. So in a way, it cuts right from the most general to the most specific. And time is a beautiful topic because it does that. It's woven through our lives. And, you know, every moment of your life is occupied and preoccupied with time. But on the other hand, physics itself, in the most, you know, kind of austere and esoteric physics, is also studying time. So it's, you know, understanding time at all of those levels is part of what I do.
We then asked Dr. Ismail if she thought that we as students in the early 21st century have a special duty to think about time in any specific way.
So one of the things that you really need to do that our, you know, previous generations, including mine, haven't done very well, is to think in terms of the long now. So not the immediate future, but, you know, a much longer sort of time arc. So the big existential issues are things like climate change, maybe worries about the ethics of computers and robots and AI. Those, you know, I think we're not really built for thinking in terms of that. We certainly don't do it well. We don't seem to be built for thinking in terms of the long-term future. We tend to respond most to immediately present dangers. So I think that's going to be something that your generation is going to have to do just purely as a matter of survival.
Finally, we asked Dr. Ismail whether or not she believed individuals in the present have an ability to access the past.
A fossil is, or a rock, you know, or those are, you know, material objects that we have whose present state acts as an information repository about the past. So, you know, a fossil is a piece of a past that's become literally embodied, you know, in a rock that we have. But the same thing is true with a flash drive. I mean, that's a material object whose present state is a repository of information about its past. That, actually, one of the biggest, the most interesting parts of physics right now is understanding why it is that we have the kinds of asymmetries that allows the present state of objects like that to contain information about their pasts but not their futures. So that sounds like a really weird question to ask, but all of the physical laws at the fundamental level have a property called time symmetry, which means it ought to be the case that anything that you can, you know, all the relationships that a present state has to its past, it also has to its future. So it's a very real physics question, how it is that you know, the present state of a system can record information about the past but not record information about the future. So it's a long story, a very complicated story, you know, the present physical understanding of why that's so, but it's a fascinating and complicated physics question.
This has been the Joffreon Fellows interview with Dr. Janan Ismail, Professor of Philosophy at Columbia University. We would like to thank the Humanities Center for making all this possible, and we would like to thank Dr. Ismail once again for taking the time to speak with us. Please join us again for our upcoming discussion with Dr. Peng Chia on diasporic worldliness and post-colonial globalization.